Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
And we'll go ahead and get started with this.
Perfect. Can everybody hear me okay? Oh, I see, Julie, I see what you mean about the light. Holy cow. No, it's wonderful to be here with you. I know Brandon gave a quick introduction, but truly is wonderful to be here at Madison. Like you said, we've been here since July of last year, so it's crazy. We've already been here over a year. The idea of taking care of aging family members, aging parents, is truly one of the main reasons why I got into financial services to begin with. So a little bit about me. So I lost my mother at a very young age. And so, my father's a musician up in Nashville. And so as a result, went to live with my grandparents. And so, through all of that, I have seen both the good, the bad, and the ugly, of kind of the whole wide gambit of having these tough conversations. How about now? Good. That's okay. Okay. Perfect. So I got two mics, man. I know Julie said something a minute ago, but I feel extra special now. But so again, a little bit about me. I'm as Brandon said, I'm a certified financial planner with Vector Wealth Strategies here at Huntsville. Em and I have been here for almost 4 years now. It's kind of crazy how fast time has flown by. But I don't have a presentation. Really want to focus on what's in the booklets here. Thank you to the ministers and staff for putting together just this wonderful booklet. But really what I want this to be is just a conversation. I think Julie did a really good job of, having that dialogue, and I really want to continue. And I promise we did not coordinate too much, but, practically have the same first point there of, you really want to make sure when you start having these conversations, whether it be about the care plan or specifically with the financial matters, to come at it at a place of love and a place of caring, right? Most oftentimes, you got to think this is very, very personal and very intimate information that is being shared, right? And you hardly want to share that with your spouse some of the time, hardly, your kids or your grandkids at that point, right? So it's just very important to have the right people in place, right? And the next thing is to, the best time to start these conversations is now, right? We're right before the holiday season here, Thanksgiving here in just a couple weeks. You're going to have family around. I think Julie made a really good point of, it's important where you have those conversations and being able to sit down and say, hey, we're getting older and just need to make sure that you have that plan in place in the event that, something happens to you, right? Everybody likes to think, you're invincible. And, Mike Tyson has a great quote, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. So, So everybody has a plan until the plan doesn't work, right? And it's being able to adjust that plan. Something that I would advise everybody to have, especially your older parents and family members, specifically with their financial assets, is to have a trusted contact document in place with your trusted advisor. So at Vector, we have that. And what that is, if we get a kind of a random out of the blue call saying, hey, I want to move all of my account to an offshore bank account in Jamaica, doesn't really sit right, right? And, most often something's up. And so this is somebody that we can reach out to and say, hey, is everything okay with Jane, or insert family member here? It's not necessarily somebody that, you know, we're not going to be able to give them financial, any sort of financial information without the financial power of attorney, which I know Connie will most likely talk about later. But it's just being able to check in and see if the person is okay. So kind of the first thing there is making sure you have a trusted contact document in place with your advisor or advisors. And, you know, as far as having those conversations with both your advisors and your family members, make sure you have the right people involved, right? It's like a sports team. You want to put the right people. And Julie, again, said a great job, did a great job of describing, you know, you want to have the right people in place for those conversations, because again, it is a difficult thing. But, you know, specifically with financial information, you know, it's really important to have kind of an overall know the overall landscape of your parent's situation, right? And so kind of moving on to the second point there, as far as knowing the location of all of the assets. And so, you know, most oftentimes we think, okay, it's just financial assets. It's just going to be retirement accounts and bank accounts and, oh yeah, the house, and yep, okay, everything else is good at that point. Well, that's not necessarily the case, right? Of course, like I said, it's really easy to think about those accounts that have monetary value, and like I said, about the bank accounts and things of that sort. But it's also important to think about their digital assets as well. You know, how many of our parents have Facebook pages? Raise your hands. It's a pretty scary place, isn't it? Parents on Facebook, right? You know, it's always fun to, you know, my grandmother, love her to death. She's 80 and 80 something. And I'm just keeping that private there. No, just kidding. She is, she's 83 years young. And I commend her greatly. She is using emojis when she texts. And she posts on Facebook, and it's not like, it's not searches for what was the score of the Braves game last night. It's actually like actually posts, which is always good. But, you know, in the event that something were to happen to her, it's making sure that those online accounts like Facebook pages, or more importantly, what about those bill services like, you know, Madison Utilities here, or, you know, you name it, as far as kind of their utilities and those sort of things, that those accounts that automate, right? Well, in the event that something were to happen to your loved one, well, what happens if something comes unlinked and all of a sudden the water's getting turned off? That's exactly what we want to avoid there. And so I would encourage everybody. So this is a family preparedness kit that, you know, this is a family preparedness kit that we put together at Vector. And you'll probably know this other dashing gentleman on the front, Nick Jackson here. He's a member here as well. But, you know, we put this together several years ago. And, you know, what it is, it lays out both, again, all the financial accounts and those sort of things, but also, hey, where are these assets, right? It's one thing to have, you know, a bank account at, you know, at Redstone and maybe at Capital One, and that's it, right? Well, if you're anything like my family, so like I said, being from Nashville, and my grandfather worked at the Bridgestone plant up there, and every payday somebody would come around with the Series EE savings bonds. And so as a result, that was like his retirement plan. And so when he passed away back in 2012, kind of had to walk my grandmother through figuring out where everything was. Now, again, kind of the generation of folks that we're talking about kind of like to have everything spread out a couple different places for safety reasons, right? Well, thankfully, you know, things like the FDIC and the SEC and some of those regulatory bodies make it to where you don't necessarily have to have things spread out all over the place. But again, we're very much talking about a generation that you know, likes to have things spread out. And so all that being said, you know, as we were going through things with my grandfather, we had to, I believe the final count was we went to four different banks with four different safe deposit boxes to get a lot of different savings bonds kind of spread out all over the place, all over Nashville. I mean, we went, I think, you know, Davidson County is only so big. I think in one day we went about 45 miles, I think, driving from point A to point B to point C to so on and so forth there. So it was a very long day of sitting in banks, and of course with those EE bonds, you have to fill out. Does anybody know what a double E bond is? Anybody? Okay, so you know if you've redeemed those, the second you walk into the bank, like you just get the eye rolls, like, oh, this is about to be the longest day ever. It's like, well, it's for both of us, so you know you can have to deal. You're gonna have to deal with it the same way I do. But you know, as far as those physical assets, it's so important. But again, I would encourage you to have something like this, right? And then kind of coming back to the digital assets for those online accounts. Again, like those automated systems, like your utility bills, like your electric bill. Be sure that you're saving those passwords for your parents in a safe place. I would encourage you to use something like we use a company called 1Password. It's a subscription. It's just a couple dollars a month, and you can it's a safe password storage. And now I know we're in a room probably full of engineers, and you're either rolling your eyes at me or you're thinking, yes, that's exactly the one I use, but. Again, 1Password or things like that, to where not only are they protected, but they're also easily accessible in the event that the day comes that you're having to pay bills for your family, for your parents there. And so kind of shifting gears a little bit as far as the the overall financial accounts, right? So like I was describing a minute ago, probably a couple different types here. I'll kind of not get blinded by the light here. It's very important that you go ahead and gain access to their financial accounts, right? And again, starting those conversations early makes those makes that transition a whole lot easier. And so, like I said, I know Connie's going to talk about it later, but go ahead and have that financial power of attorney set in place. So in the event that day does come to where you're having to make those decisions on behalf of your parents, you can, you know, take money out of their accounts, pay the bills, and do things on their behalf, especially when it comes to their, financial assets like their investment accounts, right? And so once you gain access to those accounts, develop a system to monitor that activity, right? And so, of course, kind of when you're talking about just kind of cash flow, right? First, know what's coming in every month, right? So, you know, look at, you know, what is their Social Security income supposed to be? Then two, where are the incomes coming from things like their pensions, if they have one, or maybe they're receiving income from their investment accounts, maybe receiving dividends on a quarterly basis. Just kind of get a feeling of what that is on a month-to-month basis. But then I would say just as important, if not more so important, know how much the outflow is. And that's really where you can find some irregularities. That's a tough word for me to say. That's really where you can find some of those oddities that, hey, that doesn't seem right. And, the thing is with, and Julie said it a minute ago, everybody has their own system and own ways to implement these things. But what I would encourage you to do is develop a plan that works for you and your parents to just sit down and say, you know, hey, I noticed that, you know, this really weird charge came in. You know, can you tell me a little bit more about that? And just kind of pose the question and let them talk. And that's another thing, when you ask them, don't immediately interject and say, like, hey, what is this? Like, this is, who knows? It could be a Christmas present for you and you just ruined it, right? But in all seriousness, though, that's oftentimes where you find those bad players and those scam artists really start to interject themselves because, for example, I have a colleague of mine that works at CBNS Bank here in town. And she was telling us, I'm in a business networking group with her that meets every Tuesday. And she was talking about how it is amazing, especially this time of year around the holidays, right? How often that, people like to kind of push the envelope and see how far they can get and pose as the grandkid who's asking for money that's out of town, all those different things. One scam or one approach that tends to be taken is, and again, coming back to regularly monitoring systems and regularly monitoring activity. A lot of times, you know how when you swipe a card at a hotel when you first check in, there'll be the $100, $150 hold, right? And then at the end of your stay, it actually shows. Well, what these scammers will do is they'll try to rather than a charge for $100, it'll be for 1 cent or 2 cents or a dollar, very, very small amounts. And what they're doing by doing that is they are testing to see if they have access to the account, if that goes through, right? And so after they see that, oh yeah, that I was able to get in, then they start hitting your account for $50, $100, $200, $1,000, or they'll all but drain the account. And even if you do catch that, you have to freeze all of your accounts. And oftentimes, a lot of times when you're banking, you have all of your expenses and all of your incomes coming into one account, right? So it completely locks up your account for a couple days. But I would much rather you catch that on the front end rather than be overdrafted and, all of a sudden you're out a couple thousand dollars, right? So again, it's developing developing those systems to make sure that in the event that something like that were to happen, some of those small, minute details, if left unaddressed, can really be costly. And so you as the caregiver, again, everybody's plan is different, but I would encourage you to most certainly develop that plan and enact it, right? And once you have that plan developed, like anything, make sure the plan is working, right? It's one thing if, I'm going to check it every month and then all of a sudden it's been 8 months later. Oh man, I haven't checked mom and dad's stuff. Well, that shows that probably need to update that plan a little bit more regularly, right? Or that's when you enlist the help of other family members, other trusted family members, right? And so, kind of switching gears a little bit, kind of onto the next point here, I guess number four here. So, you as the caregiver and you as the person who's financially responsible for your parents at this point, it's really important to have that conversation, really know their overall goals, both financially and from an estate planning perspective, right? And as part of the monitoring process of the plan, like I was saying a moment ago, once you have that developed, be a part of those conversations that you have with their trusted advisors, right? At least once a year, they'll be sitting down. And again, if they have an advisor, they'll be reviewing their accounts. And in that annual review meeting, they're going to be talking about both the, hey, what's going on in the world from an investment standpoint, but they'll also be talking about, hey, I just had a new grandkid. I want to help them fund college. Or, B, I had this big expense this year. Well, what do I do? And again, it's having that conversation and having those to where not only are you able to make adjustments to the plan if needed, but that's also where some of those things I was describing a moment ago, some of those irregular things can populate themselves and kind of those red flags start going up. Right. And so the importance of those annual review meetings, yes, it's making sure that, again, everything is in line from an allocation perspective and, all the super technical stuff that, won't necessarily go into today, but it's making sure that everything is flowing the way that you want it to. But two, in that meeting, you're also going to be confirming your beneficiaries as well of the accounts. And so, I'll spend a little bit more time talking about the importance of making sure those beneficiaries are right. So a little bit more about just the overall, how assets pass from one person to the other, right? And this is kind of across the board, right? So at the top level, they're going to pass by law, meaning like a joint investment account that a husband and wife have, right? If a husband passes away in a joint investment account or a joint bank account, it'll automatically become that next person's account, right? So that's, again, those assets will pass by law. Then the second level down is passed by contract. And what that is those beneficiary designations, right? And so making sure that in the event that something were to happen to your parents, are the assets flowing where they need to? Oftentimes, if both parents are still alive, what it'll be is if it's the husband's individual retirement account, for example, the primary beneficiary will be the spouse, the wife. And so again, it automatically flows over there. And then if something were to happen to them both at the same time, I would also encourage you to make sure you have what's called contingent beneficiaries, right? So in the event that, again, you know, heaven forbid something that happened to both of your parents at the same time while they're still alive, it would then flow to assumingly the children or maybe the trust that's been set up, kind of whoever that contingent beneficiary needs to be. And that's definitely something that you want to be sure is correct, and especially in the event that a spouse passes away, you know, kind of in that next meeting or really as soon as feasible, making sure that those beneficiaries are corrected, because again, in the event that something were to happen to the contingent beneficiary at that point, then who does it go to, right? And then you have to deal with probate and everything there, which is the third way how assets pass. So again, it's by law, joint investment accounts, then by contract, which is again beneficiary designation, and then by probate, and that's when your wills, trust, and everything comes in. One common misconception is that, oh, whatever I say in the will, you know, that will cover it. That is not true. That is not always true. And a prime example of that is if the beneficiary designation on any account, so again, retirement account, investment account, those type things, if that is in any way different than the will, the primary beneficiary or in the beneficiary designation will trump the will. And so that is an extremely important thing to make sure that they are saying the same thing. It's completely okay if they are saying the same thing. I would encourage you to have them saying the same thing. But if there are any adjustments to either of them, making sure that they are adjusted on both sides, not just one or the other there. And so, kind of coming back to the review process, everybody has, you know, it's hard to make kind of some of those blanket statements, right? And I would, in fact, discourage people from making blanket statements and, you know, hey, my friend said this and, you know, I think we should do this. Well, what your friend didn't know is X, Y, and Z. You know, my a prime example of this is somebody who is, you know, hey, I heard a friend of mine who's wanting to put all their money in life insurance, and I think that's a good move. It's like, well, you're 82, 83. Need for life insurance necessarily isn't, you know, it's not really a applicable need for you. And again, just completely different life stages, right? And so I would be cautious to listen to your friend with everything. I think Julie did a really good job of describing, like, yes, it's okay to listen, but it's also all the more important to listen to your advisor, your trusted advisors who know your situation top to bottom versus the friend that may only know the tip of the iceberg, right? And so, again, it's just having that dialogue and making sure that really everybody's on the same page with those review processes. And so kind of moving on to the last couple points here, and where I'll spend the rest of the time this morning. You know, it's really important to, again, to not listen to the mass media and specifically, hey, here's exactly what you need to do. Everybody needs to do this all the time and you'll be good. Like, yes, there are rules of thumb, but specifically with financial matters, it is so important to know exactly what your parents' wishes and everything are, kind of what I talked about a moment ago. And, you know, common missteps that, you know, I see, I'll give kind of two examples here. So the, you know, as you kind of go throughout your you and your parents go throughout their financial careers, their financial lifetime, things obviously change, and where you pull assets has a great effect. And one example of that, so how many people know what a RMD is, a required minimum distribution? Oh, yes. Okay, good. All right, so what an RMD is, again, our required minimum distribution. So this is the IRS, so they are, you know, any money that you have is pre-tax. So think about, you know, your traditional 401ks, traditional IRAs, again, everything that has not been taxed yet. The IRS puts a clock on those assets saying that, you know, depending on your birth, the year you were born, between when you're 72 and to 75, they start making you take money out of those accounts, go ahead and pay in taxes on them, and then you can either, you know, spend them or reinvest them elsewhere, right? Well, something that I see a lot of times, and it's just from not necessarily knowing about, you know, knowing about certain tax advantages, is that any church giving that is done, if they have, there's kind of a twofold thing here. One, if they have pre-tax money, and two, they are over 70 and a half, the first place they need to be pulling money from in order to give is from their qualified investment accounts. Now, you can start those at 75, or you can wait until the IRS starts making you take money out again when you're between 72 and 75 based on your birth date. But really, there's a couple different benefits there. One is that you don't have to pay any taxes on any of those distributions, right? Again, the whole idea of doing those, the IRS making you take that money out, they're trying to get their tax revenue, right? But by taking advantage of those qualified charitable distributions, not only are you not paying taxes on it, but neither is the church that you're giving to or the nonprofit that you're giving to. And kind of the tertiary benefit there is that not only are the tax advantages for both you, the giver, as well as to the church receiving it, but in theory, you're able to give a little bit more because Uncle Sam isn't getting his cut as well, right? And so really that's a pretty big misstep that I have seen. In that it is a huge benefit that you just have to be made aware of, right? You know, I have a family member who is 78, and so she has had several years of being able to do these qualified charitable distributions. She's a wonderful member of the church, and her advisor just simply never told her about it. And so I sat down with her a couple years ago, and it's like, well, hey, you know, you can take advantage of these, and she was flabbergasted in that, you know, she has had several years of being able to do these qualified charitable distributions or QCDs, and her advisor never told her about them. And so that comes back to, again, you, the caretaker of their financial lifestyle. And knowing those certain things that can be done to not only save your parents' taxes, but also to keep their giving at a level where it has been. And in fact, you could possibly increase the amount they're giving as well. So that's kind of one pretty major misstep that I've seen with taxes. And you'll see that in the point in the booklet, Common Misunderstands. No, that's not a typo, not misunderstandings, but common misunderstandings, meaning that, again, coming back to those, you know, common just rules of thumb that, you know, those common rules of thumb that, you know, they're not always right and specifically with every single situation, right? And the key example of that being, you know, oftentimes in the whole estate planning process and in the financial planning that they do, that you may do for your parents, oftentimes we'll see that somebody has added, their parents have added themselves or added the beneficiary or whoever will be eventually having the house, will add them to the deed while the parents are still alive. And that is I would say, like, scream from the rooftops, I would not do that. And here's why. So, you know, there's really kind of two main benefits, or there's two reasons why One, in the event that, let's say you your parents have added somebody like a kind of a wayward sibling. I'm not saying that you may be the wayward sibling, or you just immediately thought, oh, I know exactly who that is. But or maybe it's like, oh, maybe that is me. No, just kidding. But if let's say that sibling or whoever gets upset with their parents, legally they could force them out of the home if they are added to the deed. And so that is obviously a huge red flag. Nobody wants that to happen to their parents, especially as they're getting older within their home. And then the second second misstep with that, and the second pretty big tax from a tax implication, it's very important in that, anytime that you have an appreciated asset, whether it be a home or, Google stock that you've had since it was started, or let's say you had Amazon stock from when Jeff Bezos was starting it in his garage, or you name it, there, a highly appreciated asset. If you gift that asset to somebody, and I'll continue to use use a home as an example. If you gift that asset, whatever your parents paid for that asset continues to be your basis in that asset. And so I'll give an example. So, we're in Madison, Limestone County right here, in a highly appreciated real estate area, right? I know Brian May is like, yeah, totally is. But, with it being a highly appreciated area, let's say your parents bought a house for $50,000 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Well, and then now the value is up to $300,000. Well, if they include you on that deed, guess what your basis in that property is? It's the $50,000 they paid for it 30 or 40 years ago. And so in the event that, again, something were to happen to them, you'd be on the hook, and let's say on the date of their death, the property was worth $300,000, you're going to be on the hook for $250,000 of capital gains. And so alternatively, if they pass that to you through an inheritance, you get what's called a step up in cost basis, meaning that rather than you retaining the basis on all of the property that they paid, you get a step up. So whatever the value is on the date of your parents' passing, that becomes your cost basis. And so rather than you having to pay the $250,000 in capital gains, you get that step up in basis, and then you'd have very minimal capital gains tax consequences at that point. And so having that step up in basis is extremely important, again, especially with highly appreciated assets. One other thing as far as the kind of their overall estate plan is the idea of administering their own estate. What I mean by that is oftentimes, your family, your parents have, want to see the good that these assets that they've done such a good job of and working so hard to accumulate. They want to see the impact that those assets will have. You got to think things like, sending grandkids to college, or or paying for weddings, or helping pay for weddings, kind of those sort of things. Taking advantage of certain gift allowances that the IRS has laid out, right? This year, and this is kind of indexed up every year like most things, but you can give $17,000 per person without having to file an additional tax document. And so again, it's the idea of, if you want to, if your parents want to administer, quote unquote, administer their own estate, knowing those tools and allowing them to be able to do that, right? And again, that's where it all comes back to knowing, it all comes back to specifically knowing kind of their overall wishes and their long-term goals with their overall estate plan, right? And, really the last thing I'll spend the last couple minutes here on is really the idea of knowing their trusted contact of professionals. And so I listed three there, three of the most common ones I have: their financial planner, their attorney, and their CPA. I think those are, and that's where it kind of comes back to this document, right? And knowing, you know, and being able to flip through that and say, oh, well, mom works with, you know, Johnson and Sons downtown as their, you know, CPA, make up a name. But it's really important to know, because those are the people who are going to be able to help you in the event that something happens to your parents and all of a sudden you don't have a clue where to start, right? You know, unfortunately, fortunately, you know, I've had to work with numerous families who are, you know, all of a sudden kind of left up a creek without a paddle because their family didn't leave them any of this. And it's kind of cleaning up, well, what do I do? And it's in the event of incapacity or if your parents pass away, not having a remnant of an idea as to what the next steps are. And so working with, again, their CPA and knowing, well, what is their tax strategy? What is kind of the, what has been their gifting strategy in the past? And of course, with gifts, there's a blue million different ways that you can give away assets. And you know, that's obviously something that we do as well, but it's how does that play into the overall tax strategy? Of course, being here in the state of Alabama, there's certain tax implications based on pensions, right? So, you know, Alabama does not tax pensions. And so it's knowing that, you know, if you're having to file taxes on behalf of your parents, well, if you have your pension from Boeing or from Lockheed Martin or you name it there, knowing that that is not taxed in the state of Alabama, you can save several hundred, if not several thousands of $1,000 by knowing that, right? And so, again, that's one example. Then to their attorney, is this is the person who they have entrusted and partnered with in developing, well, how do all of the assets that I have play together, and how are those distributed on the event that, in the event something were to happen to me. And then lastly, their financial planner, their financial advisor, and they are the people that have helped them construct this plan and married all those different pieces of, well, what does the estate plan need to look like? What is the funding of these assets in this plan? It's really tying together all those different things and presenting them in a way that not only makes sense to your parents, because again, they're the ones that work their tails off to get to this point to be able to have assets to pass on, but two, in order to take care of them in the event that something were to happen to them, again, from an incapacity standpoint or if they were to suddenly pass away. And so kind of tying that all up, you know, this is most certainly a topic that, again, is near and dear to my heart. This is something that, you know, if I was telling Brandon before we start, you know, if your parents live long enough, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And so you know, it's putting together a plan and monitoring a plan that, you know, that you can truly walk alongside your parents with and assist them in the event that there is incapacity further down the road. So again, thank you guys for having me today. Brandon, Jason, Richard, thank you for asking me to speak. If anybody has any questions about your specific situation, I would love to have a conversation. If there's anything I can help with, please let me know.